Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, and thank you so much for tuning in to Just Us Talks with Tisha, which is my weekly Blog Talk Radio show where I discuss everything from politics to social justice, and maybe even throw in some areas of the law in there. My name is Tisha Hillman, and I will be your host this week and every week at 10 o'clock. And if you don't know and you're just tuning in for the first time, I am a Maryland-based attorney licensed and practicing in the areas of family law, criminal law, and personal injury. I veer off topic very, very often on this show because I believe in sort of a what is the word that I'm looking for? People hear the truth. I think it's necessary that whatever may be going on that impacts my listeners and thus impacts this world, it's important to discuss it. So even though I have topics from week to week, sometimes I veer off topic because I think it's necessary to make sure that the voices of the people are heard, and that whatever is going on in this world, people are able to really talk about what their thoughts and feelings and whatever are around these specific things. So anyway, with that, I have veered off topic yet again, but it's okay. So today there are so many things to talk about. And every week I'm an issue of what to discuss when there's so many things happening, right, particularly in the area of politics. But this week, I don't really want to talk too much about politics per se. But there is one thing that I want to talk about, and that is the new and re-implemented war on drugs. That is led by led by Jeff Sessions and the DOJ. Now, I worked at the DOJ for a couple of years before I started my law practice, and it was partly before I actually became licensed. It was in between the period of me being licensed and waiting for bar results and all that kind of stuff. So I worked at the DOJ in the Civil Rights Division, in the special litigation section. And in that job, what we did is we investigated police departments, jails, and things like that that may be being accused of discriminatory practices and procedures, right? So it'd be something like the Ferguson shooting or the Trayvon Martin shooting, or something like that, where the DOJ has been called in to investigate. So that was what we did. And it was good work because it's always necessary, I believe, to hold people accountable if they are going to, if specifically as it pertains to state actors infringing on the lives, on the rights, and the responsibilities of ordinary citizens, right? And so because of that, I think that the DOJ can do good work. Now, the problem comes in is when you have a DOJ that's run by someone who has known racist opinions and racist agendas. And Jeff Sessions has been, I don't want to say an outspoken civil rights person, because I don't know if he's really outspoken in the sense of, he comes out and says it, but I do believe that the things that he wants to do on his agenda, the policies and procedures, things like that, I do believe that those things are flat out overtly discriminatory, like facially discriminatory. And that's problematic because if you have a Justice Department who is protecting the rights of the KKK as opposed to the rights of the people that are being harassed by the KKK, that is problematic. That shows a lot about your agenda. That shows a lot regarding what it is that you consider to be important. And if our Justice Department, that is now led by Jefferson Millard All Sessions, I think that's important to note that the Justice Department that I work in, that I knew, does not have the same troublesome. But before I get there, and talking about this new revitalized war on drugs, I want to talk for a second about the tragedy in Manchester. Now, if you don't know, over the weekend at an Ariana Grande concert in Manchester, England, there were explosions. You know, I've seen a couple of different stories about what those explosions were. I've seen stories saying that ISIS took responsibility for that. I don't know if that's necessarily true. I don't know if that is, you know, Fox News propaganda to accuse brown people of terrorist attacks. I have no idea. But I just know that people died and people were injured. And that's always a tragedy. It's always a tragedy. A lot of the victims, from what I'm understanding, were, you know, of course, Ariana Grande fans were, you know, young girls. And it's very, very sad. And the reason it's sad, obviously, because there is hate and there is fear placed in the hearts of these people. And I know that this happened outside of the United States. But the reason I wanted to talk about it is because, you know, I'm seeing on my social media platforms people who are talking about, again, that renewed sense of fear and the reminder that you never know if you are safe in your public spaces or even in your private spaces. You never know if you are safe because you never know who is in the room and what their intentions are. And so with that said, I always talk about on the show the importance of self-care. And, you know, that it's kind of one of those terms, I think, that kind of can tend to get, you know, a hokey sort of meaning. But what I mean when I say self-care is just that, taking care of yourself. Because as someone who has worked with victims and victims' rights organizations and all of these things, most of my working life, I do understand that you can very easily become burned out, depressed, anxious, hypervigilant, all of these things because of the atmosphere around you. And so it's important to do whatever you need to do to make sure that you and your space, your mental space, is protected. So whether that means turning off the news, not tuning in to our 24-hour news cycle, whether that means, you know, getting a massage, staying in the present, it really is staying in the present moment. Because a good friend of mine once told me, you cannot allow the worries of tomorrow to take away the joys of today. And that really struck a chord with me, doing work, dealing with victims, and sometimes, you know, at that point in my life, you know, just taking on the trauma sometimes and the emotion of the people that I was helping. And so what I'm saying is it happens to all of us. And so you've got to take care of you. Specifically, if you have, you know, loved ones at home, but even if you don't, because obviously people that are single need self-care as well. But, you know, I'm saying that, you know, if you have loved ones at home, you know, they need you just as well as you need yourself to be at your at your best possible self in order to do what it is that you need to do in your daily life. So that's what I'm going to say about that. And certainly, you know, I don't believe in just empty platitudes, but my heart does break for the people of Manchester and what they're experiencing right now. And so I definitely wanted to say that today, and to anyone who's listening that is having trauma, you know, from this event, just make sure that you do what you need to do to take care of you and to take care of the people that you love and to take care and protect your space, protect your mental space. That's important. But anyway, let's talk about Jefferson Beauregard Sessions. And I have to say it that way because the name Beauregard just sounds like that. So in my head, that's how I have to say it. But anyway, so Beauregard is wanting to – he wants to essentially double down on the war on drugs. And if any of you are old enough to remember, back in the 80s, you know, if you can remember this war on drugs that took place during the Reagan administration. And many years later, we found out about some crazy, crazy stuff that was going on, dump guns and drugs and all of this stuff in minority neighborhoods. And really, it was an attempt to, I mean, it sounds like conspiracy theory, but it's not. This is real life, folks. This is real life. So our lovely United States government, which is why a lot of people find it hard, specifically in minority communities, to trust the government. Because when the government dumps guns and drugs in your neighborhood and then imprisons you on these mandatory minimum drug laws, yeah, it gets a little bit much. So so essentially, the war on drugs was a complete and utter failure, because what happened is you had low-level criminals, what were essentially low-level criminals, being incarcerated for lengthy periods of time based on these mandatory minimum drug laws. So, for example, you may have someone that, you know, sold a couple of grams of crack and ended up with 20 years in prison or something crazy like that, because the government is there is a war on drugs. So drugs are bad. We got to get these drugs off the street. And one of the problems came in, I mean, there are many problems, but one of the issues is at the time, you know, you heard of the term like crack babies and all this kind of stuff. And so at the time, the government was incarcerating users along with, you know, dealers and under these mandatory minimum drug laws. And it only, and it really hit the minority communities tremendously. And so if you kind of fast forward to 2017, 2016, now there's a new war on drugs, right? But now the drug of choice for a lot of people are opiates. But the problem that's happening right now is it's a little bit different, because now the opiates are hitting the suburbs and suburban moms and white folks. And so whenever that happens, you don't talk about incarcerating the drug users. Now it's no longer we got to get these drugs off the streets. We got to get, you know, incarcerate the crackheads and all this kind of stuff. Now it is, well, this is a disease that needs treatment, right? And so there is certainly a disparity in the way that this country deals with pretty much everything, but specifically as it deals with the war on drugs and the war on and what constitutes, you know, who gets what penalties, you know, who to give treatment to. And that's some of the things that I talk about on this show, because not only am I a lawyer, I'm also an advocate for justice and for doing what's right. And it's never right to have disparate treatment in the way that you're going to deal with offenders based on their skin color, their station in life, their class, their religion or anything like that. Because if you are talking about, if you are really talking about protecting the Constitution of these United States, and if you're really talking about the equality in the races that's supposed to be so fundamental in the Constitution, you also have to talk about the ways that the treatment is unfair. And if we're going to uphold the Constitution and all men are going to be created and treated equally, then we certainly need to treat all men equally. And that certainly starts with our so-called Justice Department, regardless of who's leading the Justice Department. So what Jeff Sessions and his Department of Justice is seeking to do at his instruction is essentially to bring back Tory minimum, because, you know, over the years, we've seen, like I said before, we've seen the failures of this war on drugs. We've seen the failures and the discriminatory impact of mandatory minimum. And so you'll see a lot of organizations like the Southern Poverty Law Center, the ACLU, and all of these different social justice organizations really fighting against this new war on drugs, because they understand that what Sessions has essentially done is reversed a policy that really instructed prosecutors to avoid getting caught up in the mandatory minimum sentencing. And so, you know, what they would do is they went back and, you know, they started looking at, okay, well, let's look at things from a holistic perspective. Let's not just look at the alleged crime. Let's look at, you know, does the punishment fit the crime? If we're talking about overcrowding in prisons and all this kind of stuff, are there ways to avoid imprisoning someone for 20 years for, you know, selling a vial of crack cocaine? If we can, you know, if we're going to imprison rapists and murderers, and that's another story, but, you know, if we're going to imprison, you know, violent criminals, maybe there's a way to not imprison petty drug dealers, right? Maybe there's something else that we can do. And even if that does entail going to jail, maybe it's not mandatory life sentences for nonviolent drug offenses, right? And so over the years, it's been widely understood that these mandatory minimum drug laws are racist. They're fundamentally unfair, and they completely destroy families and communities, specifically Black communities. Because follow me here, because you got to think about this. You know, you have you know, a Black or brown person that is arrested for you know, a nonviolent drug offense. You put them into a criminal justice system. Maybe it's their first offense. Maybe it's not their first offense. But you put them into a criminal justice system. Depending on whatever they're charged with, they may or may not have a bond. They may or may not be able to pay that bond. So they may sit in jail for months or years awaiting an indictment or awaiting court, simply because they cannot then afford a bond. Then let's get to the actual legal representation. So say they are indicted, which, you know, they say the grand jury and that will indict a ham sandwich, and don't get me started on grand jury indictments. That's another topic. But, you know, the grand jury will indict a ham sandwich. So it will certainly indict a Black man who has been accused by police of selling drugs, even if it's nonviolent, even if it's, you know, low-level drug dealing, whatever. So you get them through this system, you get a grand jury indictment, and now it's time for representation. So if this person cannot afford bond, chances are they also cannot afford a private attorney. So what happens is then they get a public defender. Shout out to all my public defenders. You guys do amazing work. You are underpaid, overworked, and I sure hate it for you, because it impacts you, and it certainly impacts the people that you represent. But anyway, so, you know, public defenders have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of cases. So it's not uncommon that the public defenders, given their large caseloads, because, again, they're human just like the rest of us. They only get 24 hours in their day. And if you have hundreds of cases to represent, chances are you're not going to have time to devote equal time to each and every one of those cases, right? So maybe you only get a chance to look at the case the morning of trial. You got to go in and represent this person. So more than likely what you're going to try to do is get this person to take a plea deal because you haven't had time to prepare for this case. And so what are you really going to argue if you haven't even looked at the facts and circumstances of the case? Maybe you haven't gotten discovery. Who knows, right? But now you have this person that may or may not be guilty. But guess what? Now, because of poverty, they cannot get paid representation, someone that does not have 100 cases on their docket, to look at their case and give it the equal shot that they deserve under the Constitution of these United States, right? They have a right to competent legal counsel. So now you have this person faced with taking a plea deal for something they may or may not have committed. For something they may or may not have done, all because they're poor and they're black or brown. Now, where is the fairness in that? And so now this person is going to take a plea deal or going to go to prison, and now you may have this nonviolent drug offender in prison, costing the taxpayers money, costing, taking up space, taking up access and resources, all of these things, access to resources for people that should be in jail, Brock Turner, for people that should be in jail for long periods of time. That's some of the discrepancies that were found when it came to these mandatory minimum drug offenses. And so you have communities that are completely torn apart because you take out, it's usually the male figure. You take out the male figure in the family. Now you have single moms raising kids. And again, shout out to single moms. Single moms do an amazing job. I would never want the job, but you guys do an amazing, amazing job with all the responsibilities that you have. But nevertheless, it is a chore, and it's all just a part of this domino effect of what happens when you have mandatory minimum drug offenses. And so what Jeff Sessions is trying to do, not only has it been proven to be completely ineffective, it did not stop people from using drugs. It did not stop people from selling drugs. All it did was put nonviolent drug offenders and people that were black and brown, because those are the people that are, you know, let's face it, those are the people, even though, you know, large amounts of opioids are sold in, you know, white communities all over this country, it's not treated the same. You're not going to, you know, when was the last time you would turn on the television and saw a drug raid in a white suburban community, even though that's where most of the opioids are sold, right, and used. But the approach is going to be completely different. It's not going to be, when it comes to opioids, it's not going to be about, arresting people with one pill. It's going to be like sort of how you had the Brock Turner situation. They can afford counsel. They can afford bond. And more than likely, you'll have a situation where the judges are going to look at them and say, listen, this person may have a great life in front of them. And so it's a waste of space to imprison this person. Let's give them another chance. But the problem is the same holistic perspective is not, it's not the same approach when you're dealing with black and brown people because of the inability sometimes of this justice system, right? This justice system to really see the humanity in black and brown folks. And that's part of the reason that I do this show, because, like I said from the beginning, I talk about everything, because the law is in everything. It's in our policies. It's in our daily lives as we go about. And it's certainly in what Jeff Sessions is trying to do regarding the war on drugs and these bringing back these mandatory minimums. And this is why I always tell folks to make sure that you know your rights. I've done several shows on knowing your rights and what your rights and obligations are if you're stopped by the police, if you're questioned by the police, if, you know, if you are, in fact, in custody. If you're not in custody, you know, you may want to ask the police, am I free to leave? If you are free to leave, you do not have to stay. You know, you don't have to talk to police. You don't have to answer their questions if you are not under arrest. If you are under arrest, you have the right to ask for an attorney and to have an attorney be present while you are being questioned. Because, listen, folks, this stuff has a domino effect. Communities are completely torn apart. Families are separated. Children are saddened. People are left to raise kids by themselves. You know, I mean, there are a myriad of consequences that come about when you have racist and known racist and discriminatory drug policies that are only really going to be, and we know this to be true, that are really only going to be implemented in minority communities, because that's how this works, folks. You know, they're not going to do, like I said, they're not going to go and do raids in white communities. It's just not going to happen. Not going to happen. Even though, like I said, with opioids and things like that, which is, you know, obviously you see all the commercials. That's the new quote-unquote war on drugs. That's the new drug. And where are these drugs being sold? But where, what are you going to see on television? Because it's a part of maintaining the system to get black and brown people caught up into the system. And I fight against that. Because it's discriminatory. I fight against it because, as an attorney in the state of Maryland, I swore to uphold the Constitution of these United States and of the Constitution of the state of Maryland. And if these laws and these practices are discriminatory, then why would I not fight against them, right? People are really created equal. We're supposed to be treated equally, then treat people equally. If you're going to treat crack one way and you're going to call, if this is a drug, and then this is a drug, right, and then you're talking about opioids and, you know, the number of deaths and, you know, all these kinds of things as it relates to opioids, then treat it the same way. Attack it the same way. But if you're talking about, if you're really invested in treatment, if you really think that the people need treatment, then give them treatment. But you don't go and throw a drug addict in jail for using drugs if you're going to say that it's an epidemic, that it's a problem, that, you know, it's an addiction. If it's an addiction, treat it as an addiction. But don't come and then treat it differently when the users and the dealers don't look like you. Because, folks, that's called discrimination. And, folks, that is what Jefferson Beauregard Sessions is trying to do with this new war on drugs. Know your rights. If you have any questions about what your rights are, make sure that you contact an attorney. Contact my office, 301-744-7996. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, to like us on Twitter. And always, folks, stay tuned in. This and every Wednesday, 10 o'clock to 10:30, and every first Friday of the month, on WOLAM 1450 in Maryland, as well as 95.9 FM. Till next time.